And now, don't make faces, but we're going to talk about writs, okay? And so that we can make it exciting and helpful to you all, we have a great speaker. Even though he left us and we try very hard to get him back, this is Michael Falkenberg, who used to be the head of our writ section, and now he works for the Harris County Public Defender. Michael worked for us for several years, and like I said, he was the head of the writ section for several years, and he speaks often on writs, and I recognize him as one of the state's leading experts on writs. Just don't give us too many. And he went to St. Mary's, just like I did, and a couple other people in here. And he is going to entertain us today about writs. Michael.
Good afternoon. To the extent that my brain ever works well, it works best early in the morning and late at night. 4:15 is sort of the low point of the day. But here we are. We've got to talk about writs sometime, and it's an honor to be on the first day with all of the super smart and wonderful people that have come before me. I want to specifically greet all of the shady people hanging out at home who've elected not to join us today. You know who you are. Wish you were here. Okay. Hopefully this talk is sort of a yearly reminder to those of you who are experienced in writs about the basics that if you encounter writs every day, and when I say writs, I'm talking about post-conviction writs. If you're dealing with these on a daily or weekly basis, sometimes it's easy to forget about the elemental aspects of certain parts of our writ practice. If you do not handle them on a regular basis, this talk and the paper, if I don't mind saying, is sort of a starting point to think about writs, to conceptualize what you need to know to deal with these things. Because it's a funny thing about it, they have this mysterious reputation, but when you boil it all down, once you get through some of the weird procedural stuff that we'll talk about, they're pretty straightforward most of the time. So today we're going to talk about the basics of habeas corpus and the basics of Article 1107. We're going to talk about the procedure, which is unique to Article 1107. We're going to talk about some practice tips, and we're going to talk about defensive issues. If you're here every year, this may seem familiar to you, and that's because this is kind of what we often do. But what I would tell you is something that I learned from Janie Maselli at a CLE a long time ago, that once a year, you need to return to the basics. Read Strickland versus Washington. Read Brady versus Maryland. Take the time out to go back to these cases that you have blurbs from, that you think that they know what they say and they stand for, and refresh your recollection of them. You'll be surprised what you may learn or what you may have forgotten about. Specifically, we're going to talk about Strickland today, as I often do. There's a lot there for you if you haven't read Strickland in a couple years and you do writs. There's also going to be three or four new breaking news, new developments from the court. The paper is current as of early April. And so there's a few things I'm going to mention that have happened since then. Before that, my general theory of 1107 work. It's pretty interesting because there's a wide body of law that governs writs. And if you're litigating them, particularly if you're litigating them on the behalf of the applicant, it takes a huge amount of energy and effort on your part to do what you need to do to get to the simple test at the end of the writ. You, if you represent the applicant, have to do everything that the Sixth Amendment requires of trial lawyers, in my judgment, and maybe a little bit more. I had a case recently where I spent more time, and maybe this is a judgment on me, I don't know,